Good morning, everyone. We welcome you to our Sunday morning roundtable discussion on this very holy Easter morning. Thank you for joining us. We are recording today from the Plainfield Christian Science Church Independent in Plainfield, New Jersey, the United States of America, and we welcome you all. And I'll start this morning with our prayer. Oh my God, I offer as a consecrated gift upon thine altar a heart dedicated to thy service, lips speaking only words of charity, love, and truth, thoughts striving to be only the true thoughts of the mind of God. Help me to endure unto the end, strong in the faith, powerful in the truth, all the influence that I can bring to bear, all the force of tongue or pen that is mine, I offer in thy service. May heaven help, consecrate, and accept. Signed, Christian Scientist, but I'm sure it was Mary Baker Eddy. And then Mrs. Eddy's prayer, given at the Massachusetts Metaphysical College in 1889. We today, in this classroom, are enough to convert the world if we are of one mind. For then the whole world will feel the influence of this mind, as when the earth was without form, and mind spake, and form appeared. Mary Baker Eddy.
Thank you.
Welcome. All right, we'll go to our watching point, Karen.
Watch number 388. Watch that you do not lose sight of the need for continuous progress. Excuse me. Mrs. Eddy once said, quote, a belief of personal sense that is governed by the truth is a harmonious belief. A harmonious belief governed by truth is spiritual sense, understanding, end quote. This statement gives us the authority for a demonstration to bring out harmony in belief, providing we do not stop there. We must hold in mind the acme of science, namely, the attainment of spiritual sense or understanding through the elimination of the belief in matter. Even though this belief has been made harmonious through the action of truth. Mrs. Eddy once described Jesus' progress as follows. Quote, Jesus in the silent tomb spiritualized his personal corporeal body to the extent of presenting it sound. Then he ascended, laid off his corporeality. All his mechanism was preserved and restored until the ascension. He ate with his disciples, showing that he could digest his food with his natural functions. I always reserve the above harmonious being in my thought, just as Jesus did. End quote.
Comments?
Well, I was thinking this morning how if Christ Jesus or Mary Baker Eddy were to come back today, what would they be thinking about us today? Did we take their message and their example and their sacrifices and go no further than just having a nice human experience? Or did we take their message and see that our divinity, our Christhood, and not go after the things of the world, but to live our divinity and see that bring into our experience what is needed. So anyway, that's our Christhood, our divinity is really what we're learning here with their message.
Thank you. It was well said. And you know, they are with us here now. And yes, they are. And our alertness to duty not to be made to forget or neglect our duty to God, our leader, and to mankind. By our works we shall be judged and justified or condemned. We have a solemn task. This Easter morning is a very solemn time. And yes, did we just get comfortable in matter? Or are we spiritualizing thought? Okay, go ahead. Who's speaking?
I was just saying, I was so grateful for this watching point because it is so easy to become idle in the truth and not push ourselves forward into concepts that, you know, maybe baffle us a little bit because we're thinking of them intellectually instead of spiritually, and instead of asking God to, you know, we have that mind, we can understand these concepts and we can live them and know them instead of being afraid of them or being, you know, thinking they're too out there for us or whatever it is. We have to progress every day, every minute.
Thank you. Anyone else?
I was this week also thinking about the sacrifice that Mrs. Eddy gave and Jesus, and how it would have been, or maybe how it is to have been with them, like to witness the resurrection. And that was just such a good thought that it brought me closer and really appreciate the sacrifice they have done for us and what we can learn from it. And when I complain, I was thinking, what am I complaining about? What have they done?
That's exactly right. Anytime we want to grouse or not forgive our people who have wronged us, I mean, come on, think about this. Love triumphing over hate. Think about the great significance of this time and what it means for all of us. I think Herbert Ricci is always asking about, speaking of immortality, do you remember being there? Do you remember being at the resurrection? Do you remember? We should feel as if we've been there, that we've experienced it. It's so important. In a book I've been reading, it's called The Life of Christ by Canon Farah. Anyway, I was reading about what he says about the resurrection, and I thought this was interesting. He said, at the moment when Christ died, nothing could have seemed more objectively weak, more pitifully hopeless, more absolutely doomed to scorn and extinction and despair than the church which he had founded. It numbered but a handful of weak followers, of whom the boldest had denied his Lord with blasphemy, and the most devoted had forsaken him and fled. They were poor, they were ignorant, they were helpless. They could not claim a single synagogue or a single sword. If they spoke their own language, it berated them by its mongrel dialect. If they spoke the current Greek, it was despised. So feeble were they and insignificant that it would have looked like a foolish partiality to prophesy for them the limited existence of a Galilean sect. How was it that these dull and ignorant men and their cross of wood triumphed over the deadly fascinations of central mythologies, conquered sins, kings, and their armies, and overcame the world? And then, what was it that caused the strength to be made perfect out of abject weakness? There is one and one only possible answer: the resurrection from the dead. And in science and health, when I read that, I thought, my God, that's so true. I mean, look, what a poor bunch of miserable people at that crucifixion, and not many of them. But over and over again, Mrs. Eddy speaks about what the resurrection did for the disciples. Through all the disciples' experience, they became more spiritual and understood better what the Master had taught. His resurrection was also their resurrection. It helped them to raise themselves and others from spiritual dullness and blind belief in God into the perception of infinite possibilities. They needed this quickening, for soon their dear Master would rise again in the spiritual realm of reality and ascend far above their apprehension. And then, heretofore, the disciples had only believed. Now they understood. The advent of this understanding is what is meant by the descent of the Holy Ghost, that influx of divine science, which so illuminated the Pentecostal day and is now repeating its ancient history. And then, Jesus' students, not sufficiently advanced fully to understand their master's triumph, did not perform many wonderful works until they saw him after the crucifixion and learned that he had not died. This convinced him of the truthfulness of all that he had taught. They no longer measured man by material sense. After gaining the true idea of their glorified master, they became better healers, leaning no longer on matter, but on the divine principle of their work. The influx of light was sudden. It was sometimes an overwhelming power, as on the day of Pentecost. Now think about that, and think about, has the resurrection of Jesus done this for you? Have you really thought about it and taken it in? You realized he overcame everything. Think of him. He was in the tomb for 3 days. He was a mangled body, and yet he arose in perfection. And not only that, he ate, he walked around, he did all these things. What problem is ailing you that Christ can't heal? What?
Yeah.
If you really get into this sense of it, there's nothing, nothing that's impossible to God. Everything was overcome. All things overcome. So demonstrate now, each one of you, all of us, I speak to myself as well, how important this is, that we overcome these, honestly, trifling problems, right? Trifling next to this. And they say, and it is true, that that resurrection power, the same power that raised Jesus up, is here today, right? It's the same power.
Mm-hmm.
It's right with us. But how much time do we devote to it? And as was brought out by this watching point, are we just satisfied with having, you know, fairly comfortable lives? And at the end of the book, he ends this with, to all who will listen, the Christ still speaks. He promised to be with us always, even to the end of the world, and we have not found his promise fail. It was but for 33 short years of a short lifetime that he lived on earth. It was but for these 3 broken and troubled years that he preached the gospel of the kingdom. But forever, even until all eons have been closed and the earth itself, with the heavens that now have passed away, shall every one of his true and faithful children find peace and hope and forgiveness in his name. And that name shall be called Emmanuel, which is, being interpreted, God with us.
We should also remember, I think, that Christ, Mrs. Eddy, did the same thing. I mean, she did, people who were there when she passed away, She was there with them. She stood there next to her body and shook her head and pointed to her body and said, that's not me. I'm not there. So yes. I think if it wasn't hidden from us by the church, I think that would have made more I think that would have, I think that would have helped us more if that hadn't been hidden and yes. not, it's come out today, but she did ascend, and maybe her body was needed to have the trust go into, you know, to, there had to be a body for that. But she did the same thing.
She did. And for that reason, Karen, we're going to conclude early today with that reading from the healer, because her example was quite similar to the Christ in many ways, not the same, and she mm-hmm. never professed to be the Christ by any means. But people need to know of this. Many of you do know, many of you have read it, but there are many perhaps who haven't. Sometimes it doesn't sound like it, but every given Sunday at the round table, there are anywhere from 250 to 300 people listening. And then there are 300 more who listen, 300 to 400, sometimes 500 more that listen during the week. So the importance of getting this out. So all people yes. know, everyone knows this, that was hidden, correct, was hidden and should not have been. It was personal sense yeah. that did it. Personal sense of our leader. And there was her betrayal and there was her resurrection.
Mm-hmm. And the mist is always trying to hide it. So
the mist is. And in an interesting article that Carrie sent, it was about the Pharisaical, thank you. Pharisaical thought. They couldn't see it. It couldn't see it. Please don't be that way. Please don't be dull to it. I was speaking to someone this week about the thought of, you know, we need to handle on Holy Week because so many people are in mourning, right? And only seeing the crucifixion, while we are in the thou, he is the risen Christ, right? The risen Christ. So, and in the blue book, Mrs. Eddy says a few things about Easter. Let's see here, I have it written down. Well, one, she says, Jesus did not make the demonstration over death, but yielded to it because of the desertion of his disciples. If they had stood by him, we should now be in the millennium. And it was similar when Mrs. Eddy passed. She felt she did all she could. And in these readings, we will come to that. She did all she could. And then she decided to go and let everyone figure it out for themselves, which unfortunately the organization did not. But in the blue book, she mm-hmm. talks about resurrection, and she says on page 27, this is in March 31st, 1907, Easter, resurrection, we must be resurrected, must put off the old man and put on the new. If you dress for Easter, your clothes are all in keeping, are clean. You do not put on some clean ones and some soiled ones. Neither can you put on part of the new man or part of the old. You must put on the whole of the new man, the spiritual idea. If you put a new patch on an old garment, you still have the old garment. There is a time when you take off your old garment before you put on the new. Now, if we patch up this body, try to make a better eye, a better limb, etc., we are not putting on the new. We want to say, I, you cannot talk to me. I have put you off. Rise to the spiritual sense. Then your body will respond. Then take no thought for what you eat, your clothes, for your heavenly Father knoweth ye have need of these things. This is the resurrection. The resurrection is not to be resurrected from matter, dust. There was never any life in matter to be resurrected. The resurrection is seeing the real man that was never in matter. He never was sick to be made well. That is the way I did the healing. I never saw the material man before me, but the real, perfect man. And this healed instantaneously and no relapse. This is the way Jesus healed. As in Science and Health, it reads, Jesus beheld the perfect man. This is the resurrection. So I did think how true it is, you know, you're trying to heal one part of your body rather than seeing the whole thing is spiritual and there's no material body anyway. This was how Jesus was raised, because he knew this and how important it is that we know it as well and not be where we don't see it. Well, anyway, I was speaking to this person about the need of knowing that the Catholic prayers have no power. And I read this in the Blue Book. My beloved board, you know that God, divine love, reigns, and the Catholic prayers this week, Holy Week, or any week, to harm your leader are powerless. Will you, as my church, realize the truth that destroys error? Do not take me up personally, but know mentally and prayerfully that the Catholic prayers to harm anyone are utterly powerless. Evil and sin are nothing. Good and divine love are infinite, and there is no other power. They are all and govern all. And that is what we know. But anyway, in telling this to this person, he said, well, in our country, you know, we're all secular. We don't even, I guess, do anything about Good Friday or Easter or any of that. I don't know. That made me a little sad, I think. So make sure, I guess my point is, make sure you realize the huge significance of this time and that you incorporate it in your life every day. You have the resurrection power, and you do recognize and see the Christ. You see what he did. And appreciate and love him. And as was brought out earlier by Karen and also Elizabeth, that how much are we doing? How much are we living this and realizing it in our daily walk, in our daily life? And over, I urge you all to read the chapter on Eucharist and Atonement. I used to have an aversion to that because you have to hear how Jesus is suffering to some degree. But it's so important. As you grow, it just, in recently reading it, I just drank it all in. It's so true. So read it fresh and anew and take it in, that experience, what happened to him, everything. Mrs. Eddy explains it so beautifully, better than anyone else ever could. So we have a treasure in Science and Health. And now I believe we will end now with this from David Keiston's book, The Healer, and Mrs. Eddy's experience, her betrayal, and her resurrection.
So as many of you know, David compiled this book entitled The Healer, The Healing Work of Mary Baker Eddy. And in it, David writes, her church was organized under the divinely inspired government of the church bylaws established by her in the manual of the Mother Church. Only in this way could she leave a legacy that would not be subject to the wayward influences of ego and love of position and power. Mrs. Eddy's church had a board of 4 directors, and for a time, a temporary board of 5 directors. 3 of the 5 members of this male element constituting the board at the time of her passing had conspired to wrest control of her church from her. They thought that they were better prepared to run the church and the burgeoning Christian Science movement than a little gray-haired old lady. Their disloyalty and lack of spiritual demeanor were indicative of why God always inspired her in taking the necessary steps to preserve the integrity of what she had founded for the future of mankind in the affairs of her church. General Frank S. Streeter, who was one of the ablest lawyers in New England, perhaps even in the United States, once asserted, according to his son's testimony, that Mrs. Eddy knew more law than he did. Most probably, Mrs. Eddy would have said that it was God who knew all law, and it was he that told her what to do. But some of her Boston officials felt that they knew better. A good deal of mental murder was going on among her directors and other officers by the last quarter of 1910. That is, they were thinking and discussing their belief that Mrs. Eddy will pass away before long. Some of them were also discussing how the organization would function without her controlling hand. Archibald McClellan was the lawyer on the board of directors, and perhaps the one most concerned about some of the bylaws in the manual. He was well aware, as he had once told Mr. William Orcott, that Mrs. Eddy has left us nothing to conceive or originate, simply to carry on and to execute. There were even a number of things which they could not carry on if they adhered to the bylaws in the manual, because Mrs. Eddy's approval was required, often in writing. So a campaign began to induce Mrs. Eddy to change some of the bylaws that restricted the directors. Adelaide Still was present on one occasion when one of the directors, probably Mr. McClellan, tried to get Mrs. Eddy to remove these restrictions from the manual, but she refused. It may have been after this interview that she said to Mr. Dickey, in a voice filled with earnestness and pathos, that if she could find one individual who was spiritually equipped, she would place him at the head of her church government. After she had said this, she asked Mr. Dickey to take a pencil and then dictated very slowly so that he would not miss one word. Quote, "I prayed God day and night to show me how to form my church and how to go on with it. I understand that he showed me, just as I understand he showed me Christian Science. And no human being ever showed me Christian Science. Then I have no right or desire to change what God had directed me to do, and it remains for the church to obey it. What has prospered this church for 30 years will continue to keep it." End quote. While Mrs. Eddy was talking with Adam Dickey, Mr. McClellan was explaining the dilemma he foresaw to William Rathvon. Rathvon and McLennan conspired with Clifford Smith, then first reader of the Mother Church, in a plan to tell Mrs. Eddy that they would commit her to an asylum if she did not sign their proposed new bylaw, establishing them as an executive committee over the board of directors, replacing Mrs. Eddy, giving them authority to supervise the board of directors and make or change any bylaws. They attempted to recruit Judge Septimus Hanna in their plan to usurp Mrs. Eddy's leadership. He told them that they were to go to her and immediately confess their plan and their disloyalty to her, and if they didn't, he would. They refused, claiming that they had progressed too far to turn back now. Judge Hanna told Mrs. Eddy. Shortly after, she told her faithful student, Ira Knapp, one of the directors at the time, he passed on. Mr. Knapp said he was a photostat. He has a photostat of a letter Mr. Fry wrote and that Mrs. Eddy signed, where she said, "A cabal was formed, a triumvirate, to get themselves put above the directors by having a change made in the manual, and thus to nullify the manual." Mrs. Eddy evidently was not certain she could defeat their purposes. However, there was one way she could defeat them, and that was by allowing herself to pass on. Then the manual could not be changed. She chose this course and chose her own time to go. Thus, she gave her life for the manual and her church, as Jesus gave his life to show the way and reveal the Christ. There are indications that she knew as early as 3 years before her passing, March 10, 1907, when she would be delivered up, necessitating the protective measures in the manual. In fact, in 1903, she had said to her students, quote, "It was not the material cross that killed Jesus, but it was the desertion of his students that killed him," end quote. Several days before she left us, she dictated to her trusted student, Laura Sargent, "It took a combination of sinners that was fast to harm me," and signed it in her own hand. And then he quotes from the Bible, "But behold, the hand of him that betrayeth me is with me on the table. And truly the Son of Man goeth as it was determined, but woe unto that man by whom he is betrayed." And they began to inquire among themselves which of them it was that should do this thing. And there was also a strife among them, which of them should be accounted the greatest. And he said unto them, "The kings of the Gentiles exercise leadership over them, and they that exercise authority upon them are called benefactors. But ye shall not be so. But he that is greatest among you, let him be as the younger, and he that is chief, as he that doth serve. For whether is greater, he that sitteth at meat or he that serveth? Is not he that sitteth at meat? But I am among you as he that serveth." Luke 22. The directors even altered her manual within days prior to her passing, illegally, without her consent, although purporting all the while the changes had been authorized by Mrs. Eddy. Mrs. Eddy always made changes in her own handwriting when it concerned her own writings. Ira Knapp passed on 3 weeks before Mrs. Eddy did. Liz Knapp, Ira's son, asked Adam Dickey if Mrs. Eddy said anything about his father's passing. Mr. Dickey said he told her there was a vacancy on the board. She didn't ask who it was. Evidently, she knew. She then offered the position to Calvin Fry. He declined. She then offered it to Adam Dickey, and he accepted. As both Calvin and Adam were her secretaries, she would not have appointed them if she had intended to stay here on this mortal plane. On the Sunday before her passing, at the song service in her home, she said to continue to hold the service, even though I will not be with you. She passed on the following Saturday night. They had thought that she meant she would stay in her room. 2 days before her passing, Thursday, December 1, 1910, an interesting scene took place. Mrs. Eddy's helpers thought she was suffering from a cold. When it came time for her drive, they said to her, "Don't you think it would be wise, Mother, to stay at home today?" Mrs. Eddy answered, as she had for many years when her students voiced the lying suggestion instead of the scientific reality of being, quote, "That's right, talk with the devil," end quote. Mrs. Sargent opened her Bible, and after silently reading the passage she had opened to, she thought, "I wish I might ask Mother what this means." As Mrs. Eddy was arranging her bonnet, she said, "Laura, do not bring your questions to me. Take them to God. You lose your answer if you take them to me." Laura Sargent accompanied her on her drive that day and recorded one of the leader's last messages for her followers. During the drive, Mrs. Eddy apparently appeared to be thinking deeply and said aloud, "Oh, if the students had only done what I had told them to do, I should live and carry on the cause." When they returned from the drive, Mrs. Eddy appeared very weak to those in her household. She asked for a pad which Ella Rathvon brought to her, and on it she wrote her last written message, quote, "God is my life," end quote. The message I am about to impart is not only an important message for all Christian Scientists, but in my estimation, it is the most important incident in Mrs. Eddy's experience, which proves without any doubt the infallibility of her complete demonstration of the revelation of Christian Science. 25 years ago, I had the privilege of visiting all of the historical landmarks pertaining to Mrs. Eddy's revelation of Christian Science. Our last stop of this tour was Mrs. Eddy's bedroom. This room was homespun and expressed simplicity. I was impressed to see several pictures of Jesus hanging on the walls. It was at this moment that my guide turned to me and said that she felt impelled to tell me what happened to Mrs. Eddy on December 3rd, 1910, the day of her passing. She went to the door of the bedroom to see if we were alone, and then proceeded to tell me the following incident, which was told to her by Miss Adelaide Still, one of three persons watching with Mrs. Eddy in the final hours of her human experience. She told me that Miss Still had requested her not to repeat what she was about to tell me because she had promised those in authority at the Boston headquarters of the Christian Science Church never to speak of this experience to anyone. I can assure you that by this time, I was not only awed, but more than moved by what she was relating. On the night Mrs. Eddy passed, her three valued and beloved workers were with her. They were Miss Adelaide Still, Mrs. Laura Sargent, and Mr. Calvin Fry. On this eventful day in December 1910, the furnace had ceased to function, and a repairman had been summoned to fix it. When he arrived, Mr. Fry and Mrs. Sargent went downstairs to the first floor to admit the repairman. Mr. Fry accompanied him to the basement while Mrs. Sargent waited in the front hall. Miss Still was still left sitting by Mrs. Eddy's bed. In a short while, the furnace was in working order, and Mr. Fry and Mrs. Sargent hurried to the second floor to return to their post by Mrs. Eddy's side. As they neared the bedroom, they noticed that Miss Still was standing in the doorway. Approaching her side, they looked into the bedroom and beheld Mrs. Eddy by the side of the bed smiling at them. Then Mrs. Eddy turned and pointed to the bed where they saw the form of the one they had called Mother. As their gaze turned again to Mrs. Eddy, she was shaking her head back and forth as if to say, "I am not there. I have risen." Then, as these three watched, the vision of their beloved leader gradually faded from their sight. At that moment, as I stood there looking into Mrs. Eddy's bedroom, I felt a wave of insight into the magnitude of Mrs. Eddy's mission I had never felt before. They had witnessed the ascension of their leader. Before we returned to the entrance hall on the main floor, my guide, who had told me her name, which I have forgotten, expressed the importance of what she had related to me. She repeated that she felt impelled to tell me this incident, which she had heard from the lips of Adelaide Still, who was her sister. Prior to Mrs. Eddy leaving this experience, recorded in January 1896, She explained to Calvin Fry that while David died and was buried, and Jesus died, but his body was raised again, the demonstration for her would not be in death even, but a body transformed by the renewing of mind, with a capital M. And from Matthew, and the angel answered and said unto the women, Fear not ye, for I know ye seek Jesus, which was crucified. He is not here, for he is risen, as he said. Come, see the place where the Lord lay, and go quickly, and tell his disciples that he is risen from the dead. And behold, he goeth before you into Galilee. There shall ye see him. Lo, I have told you. It was the third day after Mrs. Eddy's passing. In the room with the body, which lay on the bed, were Mrs. Elizabeth Norton and a Miss Grace Collins. In the room next to them were Mr. Fry and two of the directors of the Mother Church. There was a great noise, almost like an explosion. The directors went to investigate. They went through the house and to the cellar and could find no cause for or results of the detonation. Immediately following this noise, Mrs. Eddy appeared to Mrs. Norton and Miss Collins. She walked across the room and disappeared through the wall. She appeared as youth, dark hair, and most radiant. Mrs. Norton turned to Miss Collins and said, Grace, did you see what I saw? Grace said, yes. Mrs. Norton told the directors what they had seen, and the directors said, it must not be told yet. And from Matthew, Jesus, when he had cried again with a loud voice, yielded up the ghost. And behold, the veil of the temple was rent in twain from the top to the bottom, and the earth did quake, and the rocks rent. Prior to her passing, Mrs. Eddy had stated to a student that it was not old age that was affecting her, but rather a peculiar form of malicious animal magnetism that she had not been able to overcome. This was confirmed in an unsolicited report from the undertakers who were called to Mrs. Eddy's home. December 6, 1910, to whom it may concern. We were called to the residence of Mrs. Mary Baker Eddy in Chestnut Hill, Massachusetts, at 8:15 a.m., Sunday, December 4, 1910, to care for her body. We found it in an excellent state of preservation when first called, and also 58 hours after death. No preserving compounds were used until that time. The tissues were remarkably normal. The skin was well preserved. Soft, pliable, smooth, and healthy. I do not remember having found the body of a person of such advanced age in so good a physical condition. The walls of the arteries were unusually firm and in as healthy a state as might be expected in the body of a young person. The usual accompaniments of age were lacking, and no outward appearance of any disease. No lesion or other conditions common to one having died at such an advanced age were noticeable. In the process of embalming, we found the body at 60 hours after death in as good condition of preservation as we always find at 12 to 24 hours after death. This is our voluntary statement made without solicitation or influence of any kind. January 26, 1911 marked the date that Mrs. Eddy was to be interred in Auburn Cemetery, Boston, Massachusetts. For this occasion, those in attendance, all men, had been issued tickets. It was a cold, gray, and drizzling day, not a fit place for a woman. Yet, in the procession, there was an unidentified woman. Who could she be? It was later presumed to be the funeral director. But she later denied that she was out at Mount Auburn. And from Mark, and entering into the sepulcher, they saw a young man sitting on the right side, clothed in a long white garment, and they were affrighted. And he saith unto them, Be not affrighted. Ye seek Jesus of Nazareth, which was crucified. He is risen. He is not here. Behold the place where they laid him. But go your way. Tell his disciples and Peter that he goeth before you into Galilee. There shall ye see him, as he said unto you. And they went out quickly and fled from the sepulcher, for they trembled and were amazed. Neither said they anything to any man, for they were afraid. End quote. Bliss Knapp was one of the pallbearers. He said it did not feel as if there was any body in the casket.
Thank you all for joining us today.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.